CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor. We're going to be talking, of course, about the coronavirus and the politics around it. Today we're going to also talk about Venezuela and the U.S. steps against Venezuela, the bringing of charges by the U.S. Attorney General, I guess, for charging Maduro with drug running. This is an old story with the Americans. They did it to Noriega. We're going to talk about that later on. First thing, though, I want to say, of course, this is the time of the coronavirus, and it's going to be with us, and we're not sure how bad it's going to get. But we do know, and we're learning, that it is a pandemic, and sensible people and political leaders understand that this has to be fought as a human cause, in which we do whatever can be done in every quarter of the world to protect people from the virus or to give them care and help save their lives. And then we have some good news on that front, in my opinion. When China was attacked by the virus and they first realized that they had a unique pathogen, I guess is the word, Canada and others heard of this and wanted to help, and the World Health Organization made a call for all states and who could to give assistance to the Chinese who were fighting to make this to contain the virus, to protect not only the people of China through the really vigorous effort in Wuhan and Hubei, but by that means, the containing of it to protect the rest of China and the rest of humanity. And that it has been a great struggle. And here we are today. This is practically the end of March. And this struggle began, broke into the open in Wuhan in early January. So January, February, March. Basically, it's been a little more than 2 months, and it actually has been brought under control. There are no new cases in China. There are cases, but those are the cases which are coming in from external sources, many Chinese returning to China, but the numbers are not very large, and the expectation is that they're going to be able to contain this, and China is basically back to work. The trains are running from Wuhan, the bullet trains, of which they have many, many. This is part of the story, is the realization that China is a developing country, but it has very advanced science, very advanced rails, highways, air, and of course, they do a lot of work now with putting people into orbit, and they're a great power. But once again, it was a great power that has been menaced by this virus, and other countries rose to the occasion, and Canada provided aid to China. And today we have a story that it's been reciprocated. China donates thousands of medical masks, personal protective equipment, to Canada. This is a CTV story. There's a tweet from the Chinese Embassy Ottawa, which reads, "On March 27, Bank of China donates medical supplies, including 30,000 medical masks, 10,000 sets of protective clothing, 10,000 goggles, 5,000 pairs of gloves, followed by N95 medical masks to Canada, fighting against COVID-19. We are together. That's the message from the Chinese Embassy, Ottawa. I hope that resonates with everyone. I doubt I'll see it on the front pages of our major papers, but there was a Conservative Party parliamentarian who said, oh, at the time Canada was helping China, he said, oh, should we have done that? Should we be doing it because we need it for ourselves? Well, you know, the thing is, if you have good relations or humanitarian, let's call it humanitarian relations, you understand that it's like a fire in a building or you have a disease, it's in everybody's interest to conquer it. So, of course, now we're having reciprocity. The Chinese are coming to the aid of Canada, and they said they would, of course, and they have. China is helping, by report, 89 countries. And it's time to mention in this matter that the United States pledged in January that they were going to help, and they even told the world they're going to give them, I think it was $300 million. Well, it's been a couple of months, and it turns out that the U.S. actually hasn't done that. But I suppose if you asked Trump, he would ask an assistant to ask somebody what happened to that. We need concrete steps, and we actually have to have a attitude which recognizes that it's only by cooperation, mutual help, that the virus will be conquered. And out of it should come better relations amongst peoples if we have taken on this common foe and accomplished something. It's a peculiar story, perhaps. Years ago, I knew a man, an Australian. He had been a longshoreman. But he had landed in Havana, Cuba, and he had become a cartoonist at OI, I think it was the name of the paper. I think it's still there. And he and I were talking, and I was asking him about his philosophy of what was it the Cubans wanted to do. And he told me, "We want to," and if I do an Australian accent by accident, forgive me. He said, "We want man against bloody nature, not man against bloody man." And I thought, that's not a bad idea. And because here we are, you know, COVID-19, it doesn't seem to make any distinctions between our religions and our ethnicities and the indispensable nation, the nation that comes before all. COVID-19 seems to be a pretty formidable opponent and not a respecter of human life. So this is an opportunity for humanity to show itself, and that's what his projects are about, and I think it's noteworthy. Another noteworthy bit of news is that the governor of New York, I had not realize this, but the news has come out that Governor Cuomo has thanked Huawei for sending assistance to New York so that they can have supplies. And Huawei is kind of a note, people will remember the name. Huawei is a company that Trump doesn't want us to have any business with. But they did the right thing, and the governor of New York thanked them for that. So that's a good sign. That's maybe little glimmers of light in this world where a policy of the American government remains one of a punitive policy of trying to, I'm sorry to say, it's ugly, to weaponize a crisis. they even turned this little this thing over. China has come to the aid of Italy and come to the aid of Spain. They have sent tons of material, medical material, to Italy and to Spain. And so how does Newsweek, New York Times, Time Magazine, they all did a little story saying, oh, China is trying to curry favor by helping. Well, my answer to that would be, sounds like the way to do it. They are helping people in need. Sounds like curry, if you want to call that currying favor, that's about as low a way of describing it I can think of. But it shows that's the other side of that coin, because in which U.S. wants to use this crisis to hurt some people. They want to hurt them, which raises the question of our own responsibility. Then I think a real serious challenge for us, and that is, are we going to follow Trump's policy, the continuing policy of sanctioning people, sanctioning Iran, sanctioning Venezuela, and knowing that they are in crisis, particularly in the case of the Islamic Republic. The World Health Organization has said that they are impressed with all the effort that the Islamic Republic of Iran is making. At this time, the U.S. increases its sanctions in Iran. So, where are we in this? The World Health Organization has said this is not a time to let politics get in the way of helping someone. It's like someone is drowning and they say, the United States wants to know, what's his nationality? Or maybe, how old is he? Or which side of the border is he from? No, when you have someone in crisis, if you live up to the simplest codes of morality, you save them. You do what you can. But that is not their policy. So what is Canada's policy? Now, if my understanding is that the government and the parties, the NDP, the Green Party, the Liberal Party, Conservative Party, they say, we all have to cooperate. We all have to do the right thing. Well, our big neighbor is not doing the right thing. That weapon of sanctions is really putting people at risk and causing them to lose their life. It goes back. Ever since the Trump administration decided to walk away from the agreement that they had with Iran not to develop nuclear weapons, they've moved from walking away to imposing sanctions. They basically want to crush them. And that means that Iran is not able to access medicines that it requires. And here's the little lie that they like to tell us. The U.S. says, oh no, we say they can get humanitarian aid. So people say, well then why aren't companies coming forward and making this available in the West? By the way, Russia is helping. China is helping. Cuba is helping Iran to fight the virus. But there's Japan and some others have been mentioned as countries that would like to help. But they say, it's a rather simple point. U.S. says it's not going to punish people if they do this. But that isn't in writing or anything, it's rhetoric. So, of course, anybody wanting to get involved in this who would want to sell to the Islamic Republic has a cloud that they're not willing, it's a risk, and it's a risk they're not willing to take. And I can't say that I blame them. So we're getting this kind of toothy grin of somebody slowly trying to strangle someone, and we're tolerating it. So when are the parties of Canada going to speak up? There are parties in the world who are speaking up, who are saying, lift the sanctions on Iran during this crisis, if only for this, just do it. say Iran should have access to its capital, which has been frozen. And Canada's involved in that. Canada seized Iranian embassies, actually allowed them to be sold. As far as I know, that's a criminal operation, but a lot of things that go on here seem to have a criminal flavor. But they've done that. And there has to be a stop put to it. And it won't happen unless people speak up. It's not good enough to say, well, we're not doing it. Well, you are if you're not saying something, if you're not voicing this. And as a matter of fact, you could take the lead. Canada is involved in some sanctioning against Iran. Of course, same with Syria, which is also in a state of misery in this case, in the sense of war and deprivation caused by Western-sponsored terrorists. But this is a serious matter. It ought to be confronted here. And this is where people have to overcome their neo-imperialist, neo-colonial assumptions about the world. That is, that somehow or another, it is a Western missionary need to sort out who should be the political leadership in the country of Iran. And it is not the business of anybody here. You can everybody can have an opinion, but when you deny humanitarian aid to a country fighting COVID-19, you have quit the team. You become a scab. You're trying to kill people. And this is not the kind of territory we should be in. Everybody should be speaking up. Labor unions should speak up. Individuals should speak up. Members of parliament should have it laid in front of them. Are you going to call for the end of these cruel sanctions at a time when these people are suffering and who need these medicines? And incidentally, in the case of Iran, I'll say it over, they have their own money in Western financial institutions, banks, but that's been frozen, which is theft. So Canada and others have been participating in a pirate-like operation against Iran, but now we have a humanitarian crisis, by definition, a pandemic. And Iran, like Serbia, who had this problem, said, look, we have our money is good, and we're not asking you for charity. We're asking, give us, free up our funds so that we can buy what we need. I want to raise the name of an organization here, by the way, just to show what crummy, you know, how we, I hope that this present crisis educates us about important matters. There's an outfit called Medicine Sans Frontières, and had a hero leader. He actually doesn't lead them anymore, but he gets all the credits. He's like the star. He's the top name, Bernard Kouchner. So now they've been saying, oh, we offered to help Iran. But Iran says, well, of course, you've been part of the denunciation of us. You've been working hand in glove with people who are trying to kill us. And you're not offering us anything, the kinds of medicines that we've been prohibited from obtaining. All you want to do is grandstand at our border. So no, we don't need that. And in so doing, they really called attention to the reactionary character of the so-called Doctors Without Borders. Reactionary. Mr. Kouchner, who, as I say, he's got a trademark name. He went to Paris and attended a rally for an organization that for 30 years, was called a terrorist organization, called the MEK. And they were the ones who worked with Saddam Hussein. And when Saddam Hussein in Iraq attacked Iran, they provided these were expatriate Iranians, people who had left, who made up a little army. And they always enjoyed Western intelligence support, and they were pals with Saddam. And when Saddam attacked Iran, they went with them. And they were always called a terrorist organization. The U.S. State Department declared them to be terrorists. But then, you know, politics. So one day the U.S. just waved the magic wand. They went from being terrorists to being good guys. And Mayor Giuliani of New York, and Howard Dean of the Democratic Party, I think Senator Murphy from Massachusetts, he can sue me if I got the name wrong, but they all went to speak and meet with this organization, which has an army and attacks Iran, doesn't deny it. That's what, and presently the headquarters is in Albania. They were moved there by the Americans. The Iraqis couldn't stand them. They were a holdover from the time of Saddam, and the Americans tried to maintain them, but the Iraqi people couldn't stand it anymore. So they forced them to take them out, and they have their little headquarters and their army in Albania. And so they, once a year, they throw a big soiree and they pay a lot of money to famous people to come and stand in front of them and say, oh, I think you're terrific. So one of the people who went there stood in front of them and said, I agree with you. We have to get rid of the mullahs. It was Bernard Kushner, who's been a phony since the 1960s. He's an old pal, lifelong chum of Daniel Cohn-Bendit, who's become a silly reactionary. They're both a couple of lousy characters. But at any rate, this just illustrates the kind of world we're in, where the terrorists are getting support. Meanwhile, the U.S. is seeing to it that women and children, people, innocent people of Iran, are not able to fight this virus in the way they'd like to fight it. And it's in my opinion, that's in, and you're listening to the Taylor Report, it is CIUT 89.5 FM. In my opinion, this is where we have to do our part. When I was trained in the military, they told us if we captured someone, and we were supposed to capture them alive if possible, they didn't. The Rambo stuff, I wasn't trained to do that. The Rambo stuff is, I think, poisoned the minds of America. That isn't the mode of combat and what we, there are rules of warfare. We were trained that if you captured someone, he was your responsibility. He, she, they had to live. If they were wounded, you had to fix the wound. If they were sick, you helped them. If they were hungry, you fed them. And if he was your prisoner, you were responsible to save them. And now I watch the movies, and apparently the movies are prevailing in American consciousness at the highest levels of American government. They actually think you're supposed to kill prisoners, or you're supposed to let people starve. They're really headed down a sad, sad road, but Canada and Canadian politicians are going along with them. And that is wrong. So we should speak up. And the theme I'd strike on that is, let us go to General Dallaire, let us go to Chrystia Freeland, let's go to the great advocates. I think Prime Minister Harper, he was one of them. Gretchen was one of them. They said, we'll engage in humanitarian intervention, like in Libya. That would be humanitarian intervention. Or we send troops to Iraq. It's called humanitarian. And we're always training armed people, and we're helping kill people. And they've argued, the other wing of the humanitarian intervention thing was responsibility to protect. You know, when you have people who are defenseless or cannot fend for themselves, you have a responsibility to protect. Well, I think the language that they were using to invade countries, like they did with the Ivory Coast, or they overthrew the government of Ivory Coast in the name of humanitarian intervention, and in Libya they did it, and Iraq they did it. They're going to try to do it, by the way, in Venezuela. We're going to talk about Venezuela later. They said responsibility to protect. All right. You have a responsibility to protect the people of Iran from the COVID-19 virus. Why don't you do it? What is keeping you from doing it? You have a it would be humanitarian intervention to say to Trump and to Biden and to Nancy Pelosi, you can't do this to people. You know, Bernie Sanders has said it. Congresswoman Cortez has said it. There have been some voices. By the way, one of the voices that said it was Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. And she is on record as actually wanting to see the defeat of President Assad in Syria. Therefore, I haven't had a lot of use for her. I disagreed with her, of course, but I will give her the credit. Listen, she has spoken up. She said, this is a humanitarian question. But I don't see anybody from the Canadian Parliament saying that. Once again, it's crickets. That's all you get from there. Where's all this urge to help humanity? It's time to deliver. In the case of Iran, and I would say Venezuela, of course, we could all go right down the list, actually. Hurtful, brutal sanctions have been on Cuba since 1961. And it's time to put an end to this. This COVID crisis should teach us that this has been a very destructive procedure. It's something, and it was meant to be. On the program with Eve Engler and with, we discussed this, Dimitri Lascaris and Zafar Bengash, we've talked about this. What we agree is that when people say, oh, you know, your sanctions are against the government, but it's, you're really hurting the people, you know, the weak and the poor and the small. But we know that, and Pompeo knows it. If you watch Pompeo talk, he's one of those guys with the eyes of a snake and mouth. Like, he says things which make your blood run cold because he likes this. He knows he's hurting the poor. That's the point. He's not deluded. What he's saying, he just wants to twist them until they do as he wishes. I remember Ronald Reagan. They said to him, wow, you've just about crushed Nicaragua. You guys, the Nicaraguans are hungry. The Nicaraguans are miserable. I mean, what more do you want? Because after all, they've made all these concessions to you, and still you haven't given anything. And Ronald Reagan said, I want them to say uncle. I wanted to acknowledge, see, that we are the exceptional one. We're the indispensable one. And they have to bow, basically. He didn't say all those little extra things. His line was, he's a Hollywood guy. He got it done in a couple words. I want him to say uncle. And that is the position of even the cooler guys, like Obama. Obama wanted him to say uncle. He says, President Assad, he got to step down. Government of Iran got to go. And they tried mightily under Obama to knock over the government of Iran. So this, we're talking about coronavirus, COVID-19, a humanitarian crisis. But our leaders, Washington, Ottawa, London, they don't see it that way. They see this, and when I talk about Canada in this little formula, Canada always has a little better dress. You can't see the blood on their fingertips or their shoes. But they're the ones going along. They're not breaking ranks. They're not saying, hey, I think we're going to do something here. No. That's not what they do. And the guys, the big guys, they say, I want them to say uncle. So this is where we are. We have a crying need to actually put some flesh and bones into this concept of humanitarian intervention, the responsibility to protect. If you are part of humanity, you have a responsibility to protect the people of Venezuela and the people of Iran and the people of Yemen from the aggressors. But specifically thinking of those sanctions on Iran and Venezuela. And I don't believe that we're going to see any great change, I have to tell you. Now, this is, again, the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I think I'm going to talk about Venezuela. And so before we break on this, I want to dispense with a story about that I came across that I think is important, because we're hearing about it in the Canadian press. Globe and Mail wrote about it. The New York Times wrote about it. And that is that Spain had a moment of a kind of a bad experience with China. That is, China sent personnel, China sent medicine, or medical supplies arrived from China in Spain. So a right-wing paper in Spain decided that there was some of the supplies, they said, were not up to snuff. They were inadequate. They had some problem. And so that became a story. And the New York Times and the Globe was quick to tell us all, looks like China made a mess, you know, something they're doing. They say they're helping, but there's a problem. So I looked into it. I read the New York Times story. Typically of our media, Western media, the headline writer and the guy who wrote the story seem to have different points of view. So you always want to remember that the headline is all anybody remembers. Unless, you know, you're Eye of Stone and you read the paper from the bottom up. He always read the last paragraph first. There's a long story and we won't go into it. Someday we'll talk about Eye of Stone. So in this case, the story was this. There were some faulty masks that had been purchased in Spain, and they had to be sent back. Well, so okay, that made a kind of a cute, iffy, and but and perhaps headline for the New York Times. You know, China's doing something, but maybe it ain't so good. That was basically the way they were going to treat this story. But I read the story, and then I looked into it further. And it was revealed in the text that the purchase had been made by a private outfit under a contractor, had been made from a company in China that was not actually on a list of companies that were under regulation by the Chinese government. To be the ones who could do the job and in which the Chinese government puts its stamp on saying this product is 100%. This was a company that was not on that list. And when China checked into it, they also put the company under investigation. So the question is, well, why would they have done that? Why didn't they just, the Chinese publish a list of companies that have the supplies, and those companies have an approval rating from the State Administration for Market Regulation. I'm reading that from the New York Times. Thousands of companies and individuals have been punished for offenses like making counterfeits of or price gouging, according to China's State Administration for Market Regulations, which oversees standards and testing. But the Spanish company hadn't gone to one of the companies on that list. So, okay, so they asked the Spanish government and the Spanish company, well, how come? And the answer was, well, we didn't go to the Chinese list. We went to the European Union. They make the approval of the purchases you might want to make. So in other words, you're working under the purview as a company of the European Union. So the European Union had allowed somebody to make a down market purchase unbeknownst to the Chinese authorities. So when it came to their attention, of course, they said, well, here's our list. We don't know why you made the purchase you made. Kind of a different story, actually. What it revealed was that actually China's quite punctilious, is that the word? Careful. And because they have a reputation, after all, make half of the world's medical supplies comes from China. They're very good at it. So somebody was, I'm not saying they were hustlers, but for some reason they went the odd way around to make a purchase. My guess is they maybe were saving a little money. Often, in all the great miserable disasters in wars and during times of crisis, collapse of dams and spread of bad medicine comes because somebody made a huge purchase but saved some money on the side and put some of that in his own pocket. Not that I know any such thing happened here. I don't know what their motive was. But you can see it ain't quite the story that people want. All they want is that headline so that they can say, oh, I hear that the Chinese messed it up there in Spain. But let's go back to the fact. Spain is really, really pleased with the assistance they've got from the People's Republic of China. And there is no problem of them being friends and people going forward. We can see a kind of political panic in Washington and London that China's success in bringing COVID-19 under control and then getting back to business and the bullet trains running again. And for example, one train has left Wuhan for its 14-day journey to Germany to deliver hundreds of tons of medical supplies. So the Chinese are doing something exemplary. And this is not something that the Pentagon or Number 10 Downing, is that the name of that outfit, the address? They never write back, I know that. So they're not happy with the news, and so they have to put their butt in all the time. Well, China did that, but China is going to help these guys. However, but yet and still, and they have a bunch of other stuff. They don't want to face the reality. They come out of this COVID-19 thing, we're going to see China in a very prominent place because they won a lot of friends, as the Time magazine wants to put it. They curried favor with them by being nice, by being humanitarian. Of course, America, they don't care if they curry anybody's favor because they're number one. But that story, I think, illustrates why it is that we have to be on our toes when we talk about that what's going on in the world. We want to insist that people be truthful with us. And we should get on their case when they misrepresent a story the way they did with Spain. So we have more to talk about. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM.
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
Headlines now, and this is the Taylor Report. Headlines today are that a $15 million bounty has been placed on the head of President Maduro of Venezuela by Donald Trump's government, and this is spelling big trouble. They are accusing Nicolas Maduro of being a narco terrorists. It is a government, it's probably the most democratic government in South America. It's had many elections. It has an opposition. We all, of course, know about Mr. Guaido. But there have been elections ever since the rise of Hugo Chavez, who brought in, of course, social reforms long needed by the Venezuelan people, and for which I'm sure they're very, very pleased and appreciative. However, it's at a great cost, because the United States has put Venezuela under sanctions and have harassed them throughout the government of Obama and Trump, of course, now, previous. Always the idea was that you must not disagree, get in the way of American foreign policy in South America. We all know, we've heard of the Monroe Doctrine. It's a highly misunderstood story. We won't go into the Monroe Doctrine, but Americans understand it to mean that they can intervene anywhere they want to guarantee their hegemony in what they call their backyard. Canada should have some appreciation of this, because Canada's in the front yard. In the backyard is Southern Hemisphere. And now we've reached a new stage, actually. This is why we need, of course, we want to talk about this on the Taylor Report. We're under unusual conditions, as you understand. We're not, you might be asking about our usual interviews. We do more. We haven't, under conditions of the coronavirus and the, you know, we've had technical issues that make it a little more, make it difficult, but we stay on the issues. And the issue here is the right of nations to self-determination, the sovereignty of the Venezuelan government. They don't actually have to be a democracy to have sovereignty. It is not the Americans' business, nor the business of Canada, nor any of their neighbors, actually, to butt into the internal affairs of Venezuela. In the first half of this show, I mocked a bit the concept of humanitarian intervention. It's been a poisonous idea, and this is, and once again, the poisonous kind, the non-humanitarian intervention, the irresponsibility to protect, the trying to force change and regime change, is pretty much the game. Canada is on the sidelines rhetorically. In reality, they're aiding and abetting in every possible way the U.S. attempt to overthrow Nicolas Maduro. It wasn't that many weeks ago that actually most Canadians are kind of shocked to see the Prime Minister meeting with Juan Guaido, who's a pretender, is a U.S. wealthy, arrogant character who Canada calls the president of Venezuela. And this, you know, Maduro is the recognized president in the world and at the United Nations, but there's a game being played. So while Canada is not going to, as they say, personally go in there and attack, they will say, oh, we didn't favor violence. However, violence is going on. On March the 7th, the voting machines warehoused in Venezuela were attacked by a terror attack, sabotage, because an election is coming. So they were sabotaged by a group with a name, and it's right-wing people claiming to be part of the military, and of course part of Guaido's gang. I suppose they named Guaido. So this is going on, and we have a new term that Trump has introduced. He calls it maximum pressure march, and he's so, you know, Trump has a problem of patience, etc. So he's kind of pushing it, and I don't think we should take this lightly. It just is. The United States assassinated the general of the army of Iran while he was on a peace mission in Iraq. Similarly, they are upping the ante against Venezuela. And this, of course, is a time of COVID-19, when Venezuela needs medical supplies and is trying to work with the World Health Organization and others in order to save their own people and the rest of humanity to do their part. So we are getting Operation Maximum Pressure with the goal of the removal of Nicolas Maduro. And they put $15 million, which it's like we're talking about America's Hollywood Wild West, where you post the picture of the guy and, you know, bring him in whatever form. Looking into this, I'd urge listeners to read The Gray Zone Project, an article by Leonardo Flores, who's got very good background on this. And something to be said, very important to note, this article notes in this review, the pretense is that this has something to do with drugs, that they can prove that Maduro or his friends, right, 13 others have also been charged by the American prosecutor. And, you know, by the way, when they say U.S. has accused you of something, that they reserve the right to come into your the other country and take the guy. And they have done it before. But actually, the greatest source of cocaine coming into America is from America's friend, Colombia. Because they even grow it in Colombia. I'm not an authority on it. I don't know how they do these things, but, or who grows what, but I know that Colombia is the one who does. And they also are the ones who ship the most. But the United States doesn't care. Just like they got a president in Honduras, an old friend. They also a source of cocaine into the United States. Of course, U.S. is a big consumer. All these countries, when you ask any reporter, journalist, they say, you're the guys who buy this stuff. But that's the main thing is that they want to write an excuse to invade somebody, to cause regime change, and to assert themselves as the power. And therefore, we have to underline that it could happen. U.S. might actually pull the trigger. They're capable of it. And this bringing a charge like this, narco-terrorism, is what they did when they overthrew the government of Panama. The victim on that occasion, the name of the man was Manuel Noriega. They used the exact same thing. They claimed he was in the drug business and all that. By the way, a bunch of people, progressives and others, bought into it and echoed it. There's no reason to, because actually, all of these people, they always say, well, the CIA knew Noriega, and they had, well, yes, indeed. For all we know, they were running the whole thing. So, but they decided to make that the excuse. They had lost control of the Panama Canal when Jimmy Carter did a deal with General Torrijos. If you want to know that story, read Graham Greene's Getting to Know the General. He really loved General Torrijos. And Manuel Noriega was one of Torrijos' men. That story led, of course, to U.S. justifying an invasion that cost 4,000, probably more, but it's debated. But they used to say, I mean, the Americans didn't even bother to count the bodies because, you know, that's beneath them. So they're, and also they didn't appreciate anybody else counting. Catholic Church did some counting. They had a minimum of 2,000 were killed. But there are families who tried to organize, get it counted, but the Panamanian government doesn't want trouble with Washington. So 4,000, let's set the number there, close enough, lost their lives so that the U.S. could regain control of the Panama Canal. I would tell you that you should remember that Mr. Noriega did an interview with Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes. You can watch it. Very few people look at it or want to even hear about it. But Mike Wallace said, why did they overthrow you? Why were they so determined? Why did Bush want to do that? And Noriega said, Well, they came to me and they said they wanted me to build, they wanted to establish a secret base, an army base for the Contras in Nicaragua. And he said, I didn't agree with that. And he said, I tried to cooperate, but I drew the line. I said, I didn't want to do that. And he said, they told me, well, you better think it over, because if you don't, we can't guarantee your future. And so he thought it over and maintained his position. And then they said, oh, you're a drug lord. You're we don't like drug lords. We're going to come and get you. And they invaded and killed that many people. So they're laying the foundation. This is, General Powell called this, you have a toolkit. He said, you go over and you unload your tools. One of the tools is to say corruption. The other is drug trafficking, drug kingpin, all this. And the liberals flocking in and Washington Post will agree. They'll all say, well, that's, and we're going to be in a situation, the Democratic Party will agree, and really ugly things can happen. Brazil and Colombia are right now hosting armed groups and mercenaries. There are mercenaries in both Brazil, and when I say mercenaries, U.S. mercenaries, in Brazil and in Colombia. And their intention is to start an episode. Further backdrop on why this is happening. Maduro is actually quite an astute political leader. By the way, he does enjoy good relations with Russia and China, both of whom are operating on the principle of the right of nations, self-determination, international law, peaceful resolutions of conflict, and opposition to sanctions, which of course that puts them in, they're working with the devil, They're like COVID-19. I mean, they actually believe in right self-determination. They defend Panama, pardon me, they also defended Panama's right to self-determination. They defended Venezuela's position as a sovereign state. And of course, President Maduro, as does the president of Mexico, by the way. The Americans going to have trouble with Mexico if they go forward with this. But Maduro, I was saying, was an astute politician. And he has been meeting with and compromising. Understand, there's a democratic opposition. There is a parliament. The government, there are papers who oppose Mr. Maduro. They're free to publish and do. They call him all kinds of names. We don't hear that. The Canadian government recognizes Guaido, who is a phony, who's just on an American payroll. And they say they want to see democracy. No, they don't. They want to impose U.S. rule. I mean, it's so nakedly obvious. But we have to say that. So in the reality of Venezuela, President Maduro has been negotiating with opposition parties, and again, as some years back, some of them have begun to say, yes, we want to go forward with the democratic process. We want to negotiate the terms of the election, circumstances under which it will be held and all that. So the talks have been going forward. The talks have been fruitful, useful. And yet, here, that isn't dealt with. And the timing of the Trump administration's heavy declaration that this is the March maximum, he loves this word pressure, maximum pressure march. That's the same word they use on Iran, by the way. They always say maximum pressure. And the guy we hear that most from is, of course, Pompeo. Never forget that Pompeo, Secretary of State of the United States, said in August last year, in front of a crowd, that he thought it was a joke about how West Point talks about honor, the honor system, never lying. He said, well, I was the head of the CIA, and we lied, and we cheated, and we ran schools on lying. So this is the guy who represents the United States. So they moved, they are moving because Maduro is having success in dealing with the opposition, which doesn't want violence, would like to see a working democracy, and they want also this opposition, that there be sanctions lifted on medicines and Venezuela be permitted to acquire, pay for medicines so that they can protect their people. So we have a humanitarian issue, and then we have, which is COVID-19, which we're allegedly all supposed to be trying to do our best to stop, to fight, but this isn't happening because of Trump. And again, it falls back over into our country, into Canada. What is it with these parties? Why does the Prime Minister meet with the fraud Guaido, and why don't they speak up and call for ending sanctions? That's what we have to ask. And in my opinion, it's time to, you know, tell people, don't be like the American Congress who took a voice vote last week and gave all that money to the billionaires. We need a situation where people will say, stand and be counted as leader of the NDP, and liberals should speak out, the Green Party, the Bloc Québécois. They should say, this is inhumane, and we won't have anything to do with it. We're fighting COVID-19. Venezuela is part of the fight. Give them the medicine. Don't even charge them. Let's help out. China, Cuba, Russia are helping them. Other countries that are civilized are helping them. But Canada stands by and allows the bully. We're in the front yard. South America is in the backyard. They allow this bully to keep up this program of punitive program, an attempt to bring about a regime change in Venezuela. So we have a big job in front of us, and we can't let Canadian government off the hook on this. It's time for everybody to say, end these criminal sanctions. They're all illegal, they're in violation of the UN Charter. And the real folks who actually care about the rest of humanity and not their own skins have got to speak up. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I hope you're all fighting the COVID-19, and I hope you're all well. And see you next week.
CIUT 89.5 FM encourages all of our listeners to stay informed about the status of the COVID-19 virus and how it could potentially impact you. CIUT FM recommends that you visit reputable online sites to keep abreast of the latest news and any actions or directives that officials may be delivering. For more information and current updates about the COVID-19 virus, the following resources are made available to you. From Toronto Board of Health, visit www.toronto.ca. From Ontario Ministry of Health, please go to www.ontario.ca. For federal updates, you may go to www.canada.ca. CIUT-FM will continue to play its role as a community radio partner to ensure that you have the information you may require to keep yourself protected and safe. CIUT 89.5 FM, bringing you the sound and news of your city.